listening to the Diplomats podcast on Asian geopolitics. As always, I'm your host, Ankit Panda, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Prashant Parameswaran, a colleague at the Diplomat and our resident Southeast Asia hand. Thanks for joining me as always, Prashant.
Yep, good to be with you, Ankit.
We're going to devote this episode of the podcast to the Philippines, which recently held elections for its next president. Benigno Aquino will be leaving office, and in comes Rodrigo Duterte, the colorful and controversial mayor of Davao City. Duterte beat out four rivals for the presidency on Monday, taking 39% of the vote overall to become the Philippines' next president. Many of our listeners might have heard about Duterte recently, especially in the mainstream Western press. He seems to be very commonly described as a Filipino version of Donald Trump, the bombastic billionaire who's the presumptive nominee for the Republican Party here in the United States. Duterte, however, has in many ways gone above and beyond the limits of political correctness that have so far been tested by Donald Trump. He's joked about wanting to participate in gang rapes, called Pope Francis the son of a whore, that too in a highly Catholic country. He's admitted to killing, essentially, on national television and vows to continue to kill drug addicts, among other criminals, as president. Under his tenure, Davao City has been overrun by extrajudicial death squads who've taken a vigilante approach to justice. And moreover, some of his remarks during the campaign have revealed a leader who may even challenge ASEAN unity and negatively affect regional relations for the Philippines. He said he'd like to burn the Singaporean flag. He wants to kick Australian diplomats out of the country, possibly. And finally, in comments that have worried many observers of democracy overall in Asia, he's lauded Ferdinand Marcos, the Philippines' brutal dictator for 20 years, as the country's best president. Now, obviously, when politicians campaign across the world, they often say a lot of things that they don't mean, but in Duterte's case, there are particular reasons to be concerned, and a lot of these do have to do with foreign affairs and geopolitics in the Asia-Pacific region, so it does make sense for this podcast to discuss this development. So Prashant, that was my best attempt to provide a whirlwind tour of Duterte's more colorful and controversial points, but can you just run down for us, you know, how this happened? How did he come to become the next president of the Philippines?
Sure, Ankit. Yeah. So, I mean, I think you're right to highlight some of the controversial comments that he has uttered in recent months, because I think those comments have worried both people within the Philippines as well as outsiders as well. I think if I were to summarize, you know, Duterte won because he pitched himself as an outsider in a country where politics is often a very family-oriented game with a very narrow bureaucratic elite centered around Manila. He pitched himself as an outsider given the fact that he was mayor of Davao City, which is in the southern part of the country, which is often viewed as marginalized. And he also pitched himself as a doer, capable of addressing issues that were of utmost concern to Filipinos. And some of these seem like very basic issues, but there's still problems in the Philippines. So everything from promoting more inclusive economic development in spite of persistent economic inequalities, eradicating corruption, and weeding out crime through this very hard-nosed approach. But I'd also point out that the win isn't just about Duterte. The other major candidates in the election also had significant vulnerabilities. One of them had, you know, corruption charges leveled against him. Another one, Grace Poe, who was the front runner before Duterte surged in the weeks before the election, had faced issues regarding her citizenship and then was endorsed by another controversial previous Filipino president, which saw her her ratings and electability plunge as we got closer to the election. And I would say more broadly, in terms of trends in Filipino politics, repeatedly, we've seen again and again that support for the incumbent administration, in this case, the Aquino administration, which made significant inroads in terms of promoting economic development for the Philippines and getting it back on the map internationally, doesn't necessarily translate into support for the incumbent's preferred candidate, in this case, Mar Rojas, as you pointed out earlier. And Mar Rojas had several problems with his personal popularity as well. So there are several factors that are going on here that may have led Duterte to win. And I should also point out before we move on that even though his rivals have conceded and Aquino has already said that he's going to set up a transition team with Duterte, we don't actually have the official results coming out yet. A lot of the wins has been from his significant and substantial leads from unofficial polls, even though they've been widely accepted already that he's the winner.
Wonderful. Thanks for that very thorough context of the domestic situation there. So let's talk a bit about the foreign affairs of the Philippines and how Duterte's win might affect that, Prashant. Obviously, the big looming question is the South China Sea, which is at the top of the radar right now in terms of Asia Pacific's geopolitics. More specifically, the case at the Permanent Court of Arbitration that the Philippines filed against China is expected to reach a verdict possibly this summer, although I have read that there might be
Right.
some delays after a recent Taiwanese intervention. But anyways, we are going to see some result there, and the question that a lot of people have also been wondering is how will Duterte affect the Philippines' relationship with China and the Philippines' role in the South China Sea. You know, another comment I think Duterte made during his campaign was that he'd jet ski out to Scarborough Shoal himself with a Filipino flag and plant it there and claim it for the Philippines. But, you know, if anything sounds like campaign puffery, that's it. So, you know, where do you think he'll go with the South China Sea and relations with China?
Yeah, so I think you're right once again to point out that the fact that his rhetoric doesn't really tell us about what he's actually going to do. So on the one hand, he said he's going to ride jet skis out there and plant a flag, but on the other hand, he said that if China were to build a major railroad project linking the southern Philippines to the rest of the country, he would be willing to shut up on the South China Sea. So we really don't know where he's going to go in actual fact, but. What we can say, though, is that even under the Aquino administration, part of their South China Sea approach was actually not to exclude the possibility of dialogue or negotiations, or a more conciliatory approach towards Beijing in the future. What the Aquino administration had maintained was the fact that Chinese assertiveness in the South China Sea had forced the Philippines into a position where it had to seek an international outcome because there was no other way to address the glaring disparities between the Philippines, which is one of the weakest militaries in the Asia Pacific, and China, which has a not only a strong military but has shown a desire to bring that to bear on in the South China Sea to the detriment of other claimants like the Philippines. So the Aquino administration had always left the door open potentially to potential discussions with the Chinese about, you know, if there's a possibility to set aside or come to some kind of agreement on sovereignty claims, there might be a potential for cooperation on other dimensions of the relationship. And in that sense, Duterte is actually somebody who may be actually stuck in the same position as the Aquino administration in the sense that, you know, two things. One, what Duterte says is one thing. Part of what he's going to do in the South China Sea or can do in the South China Sea is going to be determined on what China does in the South China Sea. And that's what we saw with the Aquino administration. There were actually initial initiatives in terms of outreach to China, but China's assertiveness in the South China Sea made those initiatives impossible to undertake given the situation. The second thing that's important to understand is that regardless of the fact that we may have a new Philippine president, there are several institutional and bureaucratic obstacles to any significant change or sea change in South China Sea policy. So, you know, the fact that the Philippines, for example, has gotten a closer relationship with the United States and Japan and other countries, the fact that it has found itself in a place where it's had to pursue an international court decision is a product not only of Chinese behavior, it's also a product of the fact that the Philippines needs military assistance for its defense development because it has one of the weakest militaries in the Asia Pacific. It's also the fact that if you look at polls in the Philippines, anti-Chinese sentiment is at record level highs. So even if Duterte wants to change the Philippines' position on the South China Sea, there's going to be several obstacles that prevent him from doing so. And I should add, you know, one other point historically. We've seen previous Philippine governments, particularly the Arroyo administration that came before Aquino, try to undertake joint development proposals with China. The problem is those proposals ended up being tied in with several corrupt deals that were made between the Philippines and China. So there is this legacy of pursuing more economic proposals with the Chinese related to the South China Sea, but that legacy has been tainted. So if Duterte is going to move forward on the South China Sea in this way, he's going to have to be very careful about how he does it.
Right. You know, thinking about Duterte, I do wonder sometimes if we might be reading a bit too much into his signaling on, especially international affairs. In my mind, I wonder if he might turn out to be like Jokowi, a more domestically inclined leader who really doesn't show any real interest in internationalism and foreign affairs. Do you think that's possible here?
Yeah, that is possible. And I think if that is the case, given some of the institutional and bureaucratic obstacles we're talking about in terms of dramatic changes in the South China Sea, we may have to look for whether the Philippines is going to undertake, even basic measures. Like, for example, after the decision that's going to take place, over the next few months, will the Philippines, for example, issue a forward-leaning statement together with other countries like Vietnam or Malaysia, or a sort of claimant statement saying that China has to abide by the decision? Now, an Aquino administration might be more wedded to doing something like that. I'm not sure whether Duterte would be willing to do that, for example.
Yeah, and
On the other hand, with respect to new proposals that he could make, like I said earlier, it's going to depend on what the extent to which the Chinese are willing to agree to things. So, for example, would China be willing to, for example, end its siege, of the Filipino detachment at Second Pamasho, for example, or have some kind of pledge to prevent reclamation at Scarborough Shoal? The Chinese have a lot of cards that they can play if they want to play that, and that's going to not only depend on what the Philippines wants, but also what Beijing wants in its overall relationship.
yeah, so when you brought up this idea of a claimant pledge, it also reminded me more broadly of ASEAN unity. And that's somewhere where I think, regardless of who the leader is of a Southeast Asian country, be they interested in foreign affairs or not, it will matter to an extent for ASEAN unity. Where do you think Duterte stands on how he views ASEAN and ASEAN's utility?
Yeah, this is where I think your analogy to Jokowi is very apt, in the sense that if we're looking at a president who wants to focus primarily on domestic issues, but also views things through a very sort of economic-centric lens and very, very much practical cooperation, it's very difficult for me to see him take a similar approach that the Aquino administration took with respect to ASEAN in terms of recognizing the fact that even though the Philippines, even under the Aquino administration, was taking its own bilateral initiatives, such as concluding a new defense arrangement with the United States, realizing that there are limits to ASEAN, it was also pushing very strongly diplomatically for an ASEAN position that was strong on the South China Sea. Now, Duterte might choose to continue that, or he might say, well, clearly, practically, there's no real value of pushing for anything through ASEAN. So why are we even bothering to continue to push ASEAN on this issue? We should just pursue our own thing bilaterally. In that case, as you pointed out correctly, that has implications for ASEAN unity because the Philippines has been one of the forward-leaning states pushing for, if not a forward-leaning position by ASEAN on the South China Sea, just maintaining that basic floor to ensure that because the Philippines and Vietnam are pushing strongly, other laggards like Cambodia or Laos are not able to prevent a consensus from being realized in the South China Sea. And as we saw in Cambodia in 2012, ASEAN unity, whether it's just maintaining the basic principles that the body is trying to adopt, can have significant implications for the body more generally.
Thanks a lot, Prashant. You've given us a lot to think about here, and this is clearly an important development in the geopolitics surrounding the South China Sea, certainly, but also more broadly in Asia. I'm also curious to see how China will react to this event. If they read Duterte's comments on economic development seriously, they might be willing to extend an olive branch with some sort of investment offering. Certainly, like you said, they have a bunch of cards that they can play as well. And really, I think we'll find out how this plays out after this decision comes out of the Permanent Court of Arbitration, which hopefully we'll be able to do a podcast on later. And on that note, for listeners, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future podcasts that Prashant and I will do. Definitely more on the South China Sea, but also Asian geopolitics more broadly. And do make sure you leave us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening.